I think that, being vulnerable of sharing with clients that I too have difficulty of making decisions, let's say Social Security. And I think that that's helpful. That kind of put us in front of the clients that we are human too. We're not robot just to talk about money all day long, but we understand what you're going through in terms of emotions. And sure, there are so many different activities that we all have to face, and it certainly will impact decisions coming out of people.
Yeah, and
So thank you.
even one of our participants, Lynn, I really appreciate what you shared of not saving earlier, because of your own experiences, with your mom, and
Right.
that being something to be able to, and I don't know with your profession, would that be appropriate to share, but being able to say something, I also started saving really late in my life, but it's never too late for us to start talking about this. That's a little bit of your own vulnerability that helps, bring the client in too.
I like that. So really just to shed some light about, we also have something in common as well. Even though we are in the position to help you, but we also have experience that could also help you get wherever that you like to go to. So thank you for that. So what can we do in terms of encouraging clients to talk, but not shaming them? What I mean by that is, we certainly don't want to be the one talking all the time in the meeting. We want the clients to talk. But what should we do in terms of helping clients to feel easy to share information with us, without us kind of judging them or shaming them in some way?
I feel like a lot of this is what we've talked about as far as, really making sure you're being empathic, explicitly so. Even the things that you don't fully understand why they're doing them, trying to think about, okay, what are the positives of where this is coming from them? So, for example, a client who maybe they spend a lot of money on shoes, but they're trying to save for a certain life goal, being able to say, like, it seems like this is something you really love. You're really passionate about this. Tell me about that. Okay, how do we, you also have this goal, this financial goal, So kind of ask, pointing those things out, leading with empathy, asking questions, brainstorming with them. And then, there's some of the basics too that we were talking about with those nonverbals of, using a neutral tone, monitoring your facial expressions, actively listening and engaging with them and understanding their worldview, and being thoughtful of your language as well when you're asking these questions that can be really tough for people where they might feel that they are being judged. And one thing I think about too is like being sensitive to the client's version of, their self-care. That looks different for everybody. And so just being sensitive that just because it's not something that maybe you would necessarily do, trying to understand, their perspective.
So you mentioned something quite interesting, that is asking them questions that will not lead them to being too sensitive on certain areas. So my question is it possible for advisors, planners, or counselor to have a list of questions to ask? So if I come in prepared with a list of questions that I know for sure I'm not going to ask stupid questions, will that be helpful?
What do you mean? What kind of questions might be on that list?
For example, you mentioned several times where, tell me more about that, right? Or something like finding a reason behind why are they, for example, you mentioned about someone who needs to get the nail done. And years ago, I had a low-income family I was working on a pro bono side. That was precisely what I said to her. And now I realize that I say the wrong thing. That she told me that she must have her nail done. And I say, how much will that cost you? She said $40. And I ask her, how many times do you do that in a month? And she say, I do that every week. So I thought, wow, that's a, from my perspective, since I don't get nail done, and I really didn't understand why she needs to get that done. If you take 40 times four, that's $160 save. So in my logical mind, I'm thinking that. But what I said to her was, what if you take, what if you not, what if you do nails yourself versus versus just not doing it? She mm-hmm. couldn't answer me. She felt like going to have her nail done is showing a sign of her social status.
Yeah.
It's a social status for her, letting people know that I can afford to get my nails done. But the fact that I'm telling her to do it herself, it's mm-hmm. almost downgrading her in some way. So mm-hmm. my original questions to you is that, would it be possible for us to prepare a list of questions to facilitate meetings with clients to avoid these embarrassing things that I sometimes I think about that I don't even know why I say that before.
No, you know, I mean, I definitely, I hear what you're saying. And I think these situations are so nuanced that in some ways coming up with a list, it's, you know, it's difficult because each client is going to look so different. But I think right. in some ways, keeping some of these things in mind of, you know, understanding. So this client said this thing, and there's actually nothing inherently wrong with what you said of like, could you do this at home? But maybe, you know, instead when a client says that, saying, you know, your nails do look really great. So talk to me kind of about what makes you do that weekly. Is this something that you do to take care of yourself? Asking that question first, you know, and then engaging the client as far as, you know, okay, so I hear that this is important. Let's think about ways that we could still, you know, have you do this. And also say, like, could it be possible to maybe every week and a half you get your nails done? Would that be doable? You know, that because you've preceded it with some support and some recognition of why the client's doing it, it might be much easier to find that other next step.
Interesting. So really what if I could describe what you just said to me, you're really just playing a negotiation pretty much. You're trying to figure out what actually, which way swing better in terms of helping clients change that behavior, if you will. And if the solution is something that client doesn't have a buy-in in, chances are they're not going to do anything about it anyway. Mm-hmm. And they probably walk away very frustrating that this person is telling me to do A and B and C and D, which is impossible.
Yeah, or shut down, right? Because they feel judged and misunderstood. And I think more than a negotiation of, you know, maybe this isn't something that for them is the right choice, but maybe there's mm-hmm. a different part of their life where they're like, yeah, I could easily spend a little bit less on this, mm-hmm. you know? So if we're not asking why it's important, what the value is for that person, we skip that whole step.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I also think about when we're talking about biases and identity, you know, going into the workplace, a lot of times, you know, just, you know, people of color and, you know, there's so many different layers of identity where there is sometimes judgment. And, you know, for one person who may not feel the need to look just so, and, you know, for another person that is really important around their credibility and, like you said, status. And that's a reality, you know, and it's a privilege not to have to think about some of those things. And so sometimes we forget those pieces too.
Can I kind of switch gear of talking about, because we have been talking about spending, but we know that in US that people just don't save enough. On average, they are anywhere between 5 to 10% average savings. So how do we engage clients of talking about savings? Because oftentimes what I can see from a number perspective is because they either spend too much or they reallocated something to, you know, like taking an exotic trip somewhere. They mm-hmm. felt like that's important, but at the same time, they're missing that opportunity of saving. So what can we do in terms of helping clients, not necessarily shaming them of, hey, you're not saving enough. You know, because I remember years ago, my mom, and you know, Asian Americans usually do that my mom doesn't believe that I save enough. So I said to her, she asked me, how much are you saving? And this is years ago. And I say, I was saving about 20 to 25%. She's like, that is not enough. So instead of like my mom, I mean, obviously she's come for good intention. what can we do in terms of helping client, encouraging them saving?
Mm-hmm. Well, I absolutely agree. I think that is so, it's important, right? To be able to save. And at the same time, you have to see, is that where the client's value is right now? You know, it might not be. And so I think, again, kind of asking some of those questions of, you know, for a lot of people, savings is really supportive in case there's ever an emergency. How important is savings to you? What do you feel like is doable with regard to savings? You know, and if the client is saying to you, you know, that's not my priority right now, you know, I don't know if that should be something that is pushed, you know, but rather saying it in a neutral way of like, you know, for a lot of people, you know, savings is a part of this discussion that we have around financial planning. Where does that land for you? Is that a priority for you right now? Which is very different than, you know, savings is important. We need to do 10 to 15%, et cetera. And your example, oh my gosh, I feel like I've heard that so many times in my own life.
Yeah, it's no different than my mom tells me years ago. She's like, honey, you look fat. It's like, thanks, mom.
In there.
This is not helpful. But I think that it's probably no different than how we express certain situations to clients. For example, we do these kind of analysis all the time for clients where we calculate whether or not you have enough to even retire. So you could potentially have a client in the office where they are either at 65 or they are at 70s or at 50s. When you see that number is not going to work, it is really, really difficult to, I mean, they can see the number too, but it's really hard to avoid shaming. That's what I'm saying, because clients actually see that number. They didn't feel good, so good, because there's always some rule of thumb percentage that you need to have something above, let's say 80%, that, you know, simulation runs that above 80% and you'll be fine. But the clients see the number is not favorable. They immediately just kind of withdraw. So what can we do in terms of when we have numbers to share and the number is so obvious, what can we do to kind of ease the situation and help clients to do the right thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess if there are some, you know, benchmarks around savings, you know, it could be, I think sometimes it's also just the words, because part of you're sharing your expertise. You don't want to stop doing that. That's an important part why someone, like you said, is coming to you. So being able to say something, for example, like, you know, typically, you know, we try to aim for this amount of savings. However, everyone's situation is really different. You know, what would this be like for you? You know, so acknowledging like these are benchmarks, you are giving that important feedback and knowledge of norms, and yet you're also acknowledging this is not the same case for everyone. One thing I was thinking of, two examples, like one might be, you know, for example, even just pretend you're talking about savings, and you know, if this person has a small amount of savings, if they put it in this type of account, they're going to accrue interest. You know, there's some things that they could do easily to save more. But this individual has a fear of banks, you know, they fear those institutions. They, you know, are concerned around, you know, some individuals might feel like, you know, I'm undocumented. I don't want to be using these, you know, these types of institutions, or there's economic or financial abuse from a partner. They don't want it in a savings account. It's highly unlikely this person is just going to outright tell you all of these things in your meeting, but you're going to maybe notice some hesitancy or some desire not to do some of these things. So just being kind of aware of those kind of different situations as well around savings.
But that's a very interesting point where you're right. There are a lot of things that we don't necessarily discover within 4 or 5 meetings. And we're not designed to meet them every single week, which is very unlikely. But things like fears of a certain type of financial institutions, such as bank, or they have been burned in the past from a spouse that don't necessarily take finance responsibly, all of that could attribute to what they are doing currently. For example, I had a client years ago where I request clients, if they're married, I want mm-hmm. to see both of them. I don't want to see just one because I need to hear from both sides. And she right. insists upon not to have her husband in the meeting. And mm-hmm. I wanted to find out why, but she eventually told me that the terminology she used was they are financially divorced. I was stunned at the moment, didn't know how to respond to it. And I asked her, what make you say financially divorced? What does it actually mean? So mm-hmm. she started to tell me about how abusive her spouse was, not physically, but from a financial side, that she no longer can take that kind of irresponsibility. So they live together, they have three children in the same house, but they have their finance completely mm-hmm. separated. But that takes a while to find out. You don't necessarily find that out in the very first meeting right. In some way. So what I was getting to was that there are certain situations we don't necessarily know until maybe several meetings afterwards. Are there things that you can share with us that can help us speed up discovering things like that?
Yeah, I think it's difficult, but I think a lot of times having that good relationship where it is warm, it is empathic, it is non-judgmental as much as any of us as humans can be, right? That helps create a good environment where someone's going to share that. And at the same time, someone just might not feel comfortable. They might not feel safe, you know, doing it. And that is okay. But I think about listening for those things that you just mentioned. This person was insistent on not meeting with their partner, you know, taking that as a cue of like, okay, something might be going on here. So let me honor that, you know, and it sounds like you did. Or you're looking through someone's finances and you're seeing some clear, you know, holes, you know, like you're thinking, where is this money going? You know, again, so paying attention to those things and asking the client in a way that's non-judgmental, or even saying, you know, you don't have to share the whole situation with me, just whatever you feel comfortable, but I'm noticing this, or I notice you really did not want to come with your spouse. I really want to honor that request. Can you talk to me to the extent you feel comfortable about that? You know, giving the person an opportunity to say like, no, I don't want to share, but even inviting that can allow someone to feel a bit more comfortable.
And I think that do come with certain skill sets. Not everybody has, and I do remember when I first came into the industry, I certainly don't have that kind of skill in terms of listening and inviting clients to share more. Years ago, I had a client that insist upon not to bring his wife. Mm-hmm. But it took me about three meetings to find out, even though I wasn't directly asking him, but it took me three meetings to find out the reason he doesn't want to have the wife in the meeting was because he was burned three times. Basically, he was divorced three times before mm-hmm. and he really didn't have a good experience. He doesn't want to have the wife knowing how much he has. And then turn into a victim, sort of speak. So you're right. So a lot of time it may come in with how you listen, how you probe additional questions. And that additional questions that you probe has to be somewhat neutral and ideally to be more inviting for them to self-discover more information.
Right.
I felt like there are a whole lot of things that I don't know what to do. Maybe at some point we'll create a class for financial advisors in terms of from a psychology and counseling perspective. What should we talk about? What should we not talk about? And how to create that warm relationship, as you mentioned, that I think that most of the advisors that I know of, they always have a very deep relationship with their clients, because that's the trust that they actually developed over time. It doesn't mm-hmm. happen the first meeting, it doesn't happen in the second meeting, but certainly it's gonna go a very long way. And that's why oftentimes you don't necessarily see clients switching to a different advisors often, because yeah. it takes years to develop that kind of deep understanding and relationship and trust over time.
Yeah, I agree.
If there's one advice that you can give financial planning professionals, what would that be?
Well, I was thinking about, you know, the two times I've seen financial advisors And they both were actually people I was friends with, and I knew they were in the industry. And it took me a long time to ask them, like, can we meet to talk about this, you know? And I think I remember, even though these are my close friends, this is their profession. I'm a therapist. I'm used to talking about uncomfortable things. I had so much anxiety going into these meetings thinking, oh gosh, they're really going to judge me, you know? And one of the things that they did the most was, and I'm just so impressed with them now that I think about those interactions, of just saying, you know, hey, it's okay. This stuff is really difficult. And you're doing a lot of things right. Let's think about what we could be doing a little differently. But they took that time to kind of alleviate some anxiety. And I think just kind of the one advice I think I would think about financial advisors is acknowledging that this is really difficult stuff to talk about. Nobody's perfect at this. And yet you're here to support them. You know, I think that can go a long way, especially when you do this day in and day out and you're used to it. And yet for someone else, it is really anxiety provoking.
And you're right. For the most people, just by talking about numbers, not necessarily finance, could be a huge anxiety for a lot of people. So yeah, be conscious about that. And I like the fact that you mentioned you have to acknowledge that this is a difficult topic to talk about. And you're right, most of us are trying not to talk about money with other people, right? And supporting them. I think one of the key things you hit on is supporting your clients, acknowledging that this is a difficult situation to go through, is this difficult conversation, but at the same time, supporting what their goals, how they wanted to accomplish their goal. So thank you so much for, I wish we had more time to go more in depth, but thank you so much for these valuable short lessons that you provided. I really do appreciate it. So bear with me as I kind of close out the session. So thank you, Dr. Kumar. We're so glad to have you at the Next Gen Mentoring Forum. This is an incredible informative session for me. At least I learned so much about how to build a trust and relationship by acknowledging difficult conversation as well as supporting your clients in the different layers, if you will. And I also wanted to thank for California Lutheran University School of Management Financial Planning Program for sponsoring today's Next Gen Mentoring Forum. California Lutheran University School of Management offers MBA in financial planning, helps financial advisors pursue a leadership position, grow their financial planning practice by deploying advanced financial planning, effective clients communication and counseling, as well as streamlined practice management. Please sign up for our info session for more information about the program. Our next Next Gen Mentoring Forum is on November 11th. At 1 p.m., and that's next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Please join me to interview Dr. Vlad Venom on why is talent management important for financial planning practices. So thank you all for attending today's session. We really appreciated your time, and we wanted to thank Dr. Kumar for today's webinar session. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Okay.